Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Drew Silver, author of The Vampire Within Trilogy. She has just released her second book in the series titled New Blood, and we are just so excited to talk with her today about her new release. So before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Drew. Drew Silver is a huge fan of the classic vampire story, which began when she saw the original Dracula movie starring Bela Lugosi. Inspired by observing the similarities between our lives and that of vampires, Silver's vampire trilogy was born. Wanting to keep the excitement of the vampire realm alive in old fans and hopefully gain new ones, Silver intertwined the past and present in a feasible way with modern themes in science and DNA manipulation. Silver's combined education and experience in law enforcement, martial arts, and the lifelong attraction to horror themes provide a wealth of possibilities to pull from this past, fast-paced trilogy. With her captivating writing style and talent for observation, she is reawakening the slumbering expectations of vampire fans everywhere. So I'm so happy to have Drew on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Drew.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Me too. You know, we had first got to know each other briefly through your first book, The Vampire Within, the beginning, and we had an interview at that time, and I'm just so happy to actually have the chance to get you live on the phone today. This is great.
Oh, I think you guys are wonderful.
Oh.
I love being able to talk to you guys about everything that's going on.
Oh, good, good. So I'm really interested in the setting of your trilogy. It takes place in the fictional city of Triton, California, and I know you're actually from a city in California. Would you tell us more about this setting and how your own surroundings influenced this choice?
Well, I live in San Diego, and it's a beautiful city, and there's wonderful people here. I think being so close to Hollywood, there is a lot about beauty and having wealth and having power and certain things like that. So when I started writing this trilogy, I wanted to make a model town that was in California, and base it off of things that I have seen since being here. And it's a night and day thing for me because I grew up in Indiana. So when I came here, it was interesting how you go down the street and there's billboards for everything from, you know, facelifts and liposuction and, you know, and the next great pill to make you lose weight. And it's amazing. And you know, so I created Triton City based on that fact. I thought, well, I'm going to make a model town, you know, where it's a lot of power and a lot of money, and it has a, you know, prestigious university.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to create it the way I think that a lot of cities are, where you have these wonderful people that go there with the idea of getting wealthy and having a great education and, you know, and you can't go wrong living in California.
Sure. It's a far cry from Indiana.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, great. So when did the idea for this series begin, and when did you start writing?
Well, like I said, when I first got here, it was kind of like a culture shock for me because when I lived in Indiana, you know, people would wave at you. They'd say, how you doing? You know, there was not this need to be perfect. It was, everybody was come as you are and you're accepted as you are, you know, physically. And here you can tell that this is a very fast-paced area, and I'm sure it's everywhere, starting to be everywhere anymore, but, you know, you turn on the television and it's, you know, this great pill that will do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I watched and the more I watched the people around me and I started listening to people's conversations, they were always, especially women, it seemed, were always wanting to, you know, lose weight. Guys were always wanting to bulk up, you know. It's, and I don't want to say shallow, but we have become this society that, you know, we want more and more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a, you know, internet system, but it's never fast enough. And it wasn't that long ago, if you remember, that we were going to the library to do most of our research.
That's true.
And, you know, so when I started thinking about it, I thought, you know, this, we we really are kind of like vampires in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And this probably came to me about three years ago. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, the similarities are kind of eerie. You know, we all want to live forever. We all want to stay young forever. You know, we want to, you know, the good thing is we want to cure ailments and do all these wonderful things. And what would we do to do that? And so I started thinking about it, and the more I thought about it, I thought, if there was a possibility that we found vampire remains, what would we do with it? Would we do something good with it and try to extract DNA, manipulate it to where it cured ailments, or, you know, would we be more sinister about it? And so I just started writing the Vampire Within trilogy.
That's great. So it actually, from the beginning, you had the vision that it would be a trilogy?
Absolutely, absolutely. I realized that with everything else, and it's terrible for me to say, but I can't sit down due to my work schedule and everything else. I can't sit down and read a 600 or 800 page book
mm-hmm.
in any reasonable amount of time. And so I thought, well, you know, this idea deserves that. And I thought, well, I'm going to break it up into a trilogy because that's what it deserves, and it will be a fun, fast-paced read for everyone. And they, you know, a lot of the concepts are, I wouldn't say complicated, but I want them to be able to absorb them and enjoy it because, you know, I think when the readers, you know, finish this trilogy, they're going to see the similarities more so than they thought they would.
Mm-hmm. And after each one, it probably gives a certain amount of integration time and, you know, the thought process, you know, people can think about what's going on and that sort of thing. I think it's great that you've made this into a trilogy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it really works. So why don't you give us some backstory, give your listeners today a bit of a synopsis of the first book, The Vampire Within the Beginning.
Sure. The Beginning is about a group of college students that are lured into participating in a university-sponsored research project. And the project promises to cure everything from, you know, asthma to being more physically attractive, to athletic performance. And when the students arrive at this research project, they're divided into two groups. They're divided into an experimental group and a control group. And I tried to stick very close to how these, you know, university projects really are.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is that they start to realize that there are side effects. And towards the end, they realize the side effects are becoming that they're going to become vampires. But if they don't finish the serum, because they've been, you know, giving these injections, they're supposed to be getting these injections over weeks, if they don't finish it, then they're going to die.
Mm, okay.
So they're left with a pretty severe choice.
A big
of,
choice.
You know, of, okay, you can either finish this and become a vampire or not and die because the serum that they're given is changing their DNA makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it ends. It ends with them making the decision.
Okay. All right. And then what about the new book, New Blood? What are we looking at as far as the storyline continuation?
Well, it's going to pick up exactly where the last one ended. And you're going to, as the reader, you're going to see them start to change and what they're going through. And not only are they going through these changes that are very gut-wrenching and painful, they're also being hunted down by another group of vampires that, and I can't tell you so much or it's going to take away from the book, but
don't give it away.
You know, there's other vampires that are hunting them. There's also previous experimental groups that didn't have the greatest results.
Oh.
So they have these other creature-like things that are almost, they're decaying, they're having these horrific side effects that are also coming after them.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're getting used to, you know, for example, they start getting pains in their mouth and they can't figure out why, you know, I mean, they know why, but, you know, you're sitting there and at first they're like, why is my mouth hurt so much? It's because they're getting new teeth to form.
Oh.
And so I really tried to keep this trilogy as scientific as possible so that when people go and research, it's not as far-fetched as I think some other books can, you know, lead the reader to believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So why did you decide to use the university students as your main characters?
Well, when I went to college, I went to college at Indiana, and you know, you walk down the street and you have everybody and their brother wanting to give you a credit card. I mean, you are approved, you know, for outstanding limits. I mean, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also, you know, it's the first time you're on your own and you have a new group of friends. You want to, you know, have new experiences. So and you're no longer under the protection of your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to create something that, you know, as we get older, we get wiser to the, you know, the ways of, well, you know, quick fix pills don't work. But at 18, 19, and in our early 20s, we're more likely to, you know, say, oh, you know, you have a hangover pill, give me that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I mean, we're more open to possibility than we are as we get older.
There's a lot of experimentation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think most of us have, you know, stayed up way too late partying or, you know, just did crazy things. And I thought, well, you know, this is the group, if I was going to be a sinister person, this is the group I'd target.
Yes. Interesting. And so, well, let's talk a little bit about the sinister aspect, the Dr. Cohen character. Tell us more about him, how you kind of formulated his character, and whether he has any real-life representations, if he symbolizes anything that we could look at in the real world today.
Well, he is touched upon between the two books. He is definitely sinister. His real evilness, more so than what he is going to come out in the third book. He is almost like and I hate to make the comparison, he's almost like a terrorist in
mm-hmm.
charge of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
He wants power. He wants it all. He wants to control people. You know, he thinks that it's going to be this wonderful thing for him. And anyone who knows, you can't control people and you can't control their lives. You may think you can, but they're going to react and they're going to do their own thing. And if you give people the wrong people the power to do things, they're going to start taking it into their own hands. And I think if we look around, you know, we have enough people like Dr. Cohen to, you know, to go, wow, this is exactly who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he symbolizes what a terrorist is. He symbolizes he wants ultimate power. He wants to be he wants to control everything around him, and he will terrorize people until they succumb to it. And this is what this professor or this doctor does, is he gets these students to believe in him. He injects them, and then as they start to change, they go back to him for help.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more sinister things he's done to them, but I can't tell you that because you'll learn it in the third book.
Interesting. Oh, that's just fascinating. Fascinating. So now your main characters are, you know, there's some really deep underlying themes that are going on in your book. How strong is the character development, and can you tell us a little bit about some of the integral ones that are in all of the books besides Dr. Cohen?
Sure. I would say the good guys are led by a young man named Justin Monroe. He is caught up in this tragedy for many reasons. He has an older brother who has just had this weird thing that happened to him years ago, and he thought, you know, that he had done this drug overdose, and he realized that his brother was caught up in the initial experiment in a kind of a roundabout way.
Mm-hmm.
And so his brother has been trying to protect him for years and years and years to keep him. And like I said, you know, anyone who knows about science, they take years and years to try to perfect things. So he's been trying to protect him the whole time, and he's been, you know, pretended that he couldn't speak and, you know, he wasn't all there, and then it comes out that he is. So you have Justin, who is trying to protect his girlfriend and his brother from these creatures that know that they all know, and that they have been turned. And so he's leading this group, and he's trying to keep everyone from losing their soul. And what I mean by that is, you know, this is not about these vampires losing their soul completely. Like, they still see themselves in the mirror, and it's not where they don't see, you know, themselves. But it's truly about keeping good, the goodness in you, and not crossing that line and being absorbed by the power and the strength. So he's a really strong character. He takes people through both books so far, and he will take them into the third book. He's the other main characters that are in the book, they all bring these backstories that are extremely important. There's a brother and sister in the group called, they're CJ and Greg Ashton, and they own due to tragic circumstances, they have inherited a weapons facility, which will also come into play in the third book. You have Brenda Ryan, who is another main character whose parents own a diamond mine. And in the second book, you learn that the diamond mine, when they were, you know, mining it, they came across a hidden cavern. And in this hidden cavern, these years and years ago, there were remains found. So all these characters in the get-go, they don't know each other. And they have, throughout this first book, they, you know, slowly start to, you know, come together. And in the second book, it's all about survival, and they learn who they can trust, who they can't trust. So it's a really good rush, and I think there's, you know, there's a character for everyone to relate to.
Mm-hmm.
It was very important to bring that diversity of college life into this trilogy, because I didn't want to leave anyone out, because it's not the way colleges are. You have a mixture of everyone.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, those kind of scrawny people, and you have the nerdy people, and then you have the jocks. But I think what they all bring is the passion and the will to live.
Mm-hmm.
And once you take, you know, we've had certain tragedies in our history that you fight as one to survive. You know, you do whatever you can, and this is what this is about, these kids putting aside any differences, social, racial, whatever, to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are going to really love the characters, because it is very character-driven.
That is great. That, you know, it's so interesting. This story really does kind of twist the classic vampire story a little bit with the introduction of the science and genetic engineering and that sort of thing. Would you tell us a little more about your decision to really kind of expand on the classic vampire story?
Sure, absolutely. When I started researching, doing research and, you know, thinking about what I was going to do with this trilogy, you know, it always, you know, my family would be like, well, is this going to be like so-and-so's novel, or is this going to be, and, you know, for me, I'm such a fan, as you know, of the classic vampire story. I, you know, I think something should be left alone. And even though I think, you know, that, you know, writing about the 16th or 17th century is great, or making the vampire bite someone to, you know, transfer, you know, the what I consider a disease to them, the curse, but it's been done so many times.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, when you see somebody go, oh, wow, there's so many, you know, vampire movies that are the same, da-da-da-da-da, and I've watched them and I love them, and I thought, but I don't want to write the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just put different names in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up doing is I started talking to a friend of mine who has dual degrees in dual biology and cellular biology degrees, and I said, you know, this is what I'm thinking about doing. I said, I said, we're talking about, you know, genetic engineering all the time in the news, and people are wanting to know if we can, you know, take this and grow an ear out of it, and I'm just like, we have all this stuff going. And I said, we're playing God.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, in a lot of ways, and as we talked before, there's a lot of things that go in everyone's life, including mine, that I think, wow, you know, if we had the ability to cure ailments, you know, what would it be worth? But I always come back to the point of, we can't play God,
mm-hmm.
you know, and as much as I want to save people, there are certain lines that we shouldn't cross.
Mm.
And we started talking, and I started, you know, listening to her, and she said, you know what, she's like, there are these things in us that, you know, if we could stop them from deteriorating, they're called telomeres, if we could stop them from deteriorating, we wouldn't age. And I'm like, so we have the power to stay young. And she's like, yeah, but the problem is that even though they figured it out, how to stop it, it gives us all sorts of cancers, so we die anyway.
Gosh.
You know, but it's interesting because we do have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't figured out how to, you know, capture it. It's like our internal fountain of youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people read this, when people read this trilogy, they're, you know, they're going to see that, you know, this initially this was a noble thing they wanted to do. They wanted to, when they found the vampire remains, they extracted the DNA. You know, they've taken different things from it. And what they did was they tried to manipulate it to take away the original side effects, like going outside. And what I did was I looped that into people who have XP, which is it's shortened form because I'm terrible at saying the extended form, but it's a problem with your skin. And you can't go outside because you have no protection on your skin and you will get cancers immediately.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Right. It's X-Men pigmentosa, I think is how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have certain genetic links that go back to the idea of the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is called clinical vampirism. A lot of people actually believe they're vampires, and they have, you know, this is the clinical name, is clinical vampirism. So there is a lot of common up-to-date things that we see every day that are reflective of the vampire legend.
Yeah.
And I just took the science behind those things and said, you know, let's make vampires real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there is a possibility they do exist, and I am never one to say they do or don't,
mm-hmm.
Because no one has been able to prove to me one way or the other, but you take that and you say, okay, if we did find it, what will we do with it? Well, you'd have those people who would want to, say, A, cure people of AIDS and leukemia and anything else. Then you'd have people who would want to create an ultimate soldier, you know, so then you'd get military funding, which is a sneak peek into a little bit of the third book, and also into the third book, you'd have those people that will, like I said, start with good intentions and had completely changed their mind and thought, wow, I can take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all those things will, of course, you know, anyone with science knows to be able to figure out how someone does something, they have to find original DNA, you know, sample as well.
Uh-huh.
So when the third book opens, you have one group of the good guys going to Romania to hopefully find another sample, and you have another group trying to fight Dr. Cohen and his henchmen.
Oh, interesting. Book
yeah,
three
so,
is going to be big.
Yeah, so we are, like I said, you know, with the science, it has fueled a very feasible and realistic way of what might happen if we ever discovered an actual vampire.
DNA from a real vampire.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I also really appreciate about the theme of your trilogy, kind of taking it to, you know, a broader spectrum of society that possibly there is within our society a very vampiric nature to it where we feed off of each other. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can see this in business, in relationships, culturally, you know, globally with imperialism. What are your thoughts to that kind of an expanded theme to the whole vampire?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people end up asking me that.
Uh-huh.
They see the similarity. And, you know, it's one of those tough lines where when you're a fiction writer, you don't want to become that political speaker, you know?
Sure.
But it is that. It is everything. You know, like I said, we have, in our society, we are reflective of a lot of things. Vampires have never gone away because we see ourselves in them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people will say, no, we don't, but yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in business, there's not, you know, the one thing I love about being a writer is I don't have to compete with anybody. I just try to compete with myself to be better and better every time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, in business settings and the like, you know, we will do whatever we can to get promoted.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be some of us that won't step over people, you know, step on people as, you know, so I look at them as, you know, like kind of the good guys. But you'll have other people that will just do whatever they can to get to the top.
Yeah.
And in the same way with all the, you know, the power struggles, and we're very flippant. We're a very flippant, you know, society when it comes to it's kind of like the masses go where, you know, one person thinks they should go, and then you might have a few people that step out and go, hey, you know, this isn't for us. And so I try really hard to not get into the, you know, social or the political aspect, because it can just be a wicked, it's kind of like this, you get up there and you speak your mind and we have the freedom of speech. But somebody will always come up and try to prove you wrong. When my dog is barking.
you hear him.
So, come here, buddy. Come here. He's being my good guard dog. I hope it isn't too distracting.
It's not for me. I think our audience will probably enjoy the realism in the background.
Well, you know, he really thinks he's this Doberman, but he's a Chihuahua.
They have no idea how small they are.
Oh, I'm telling you. To get back to your question, you know, I think that vampires have survived because it's the one thing that constantly changes with us. We can make them who, you know, when we write stories, we can put what, you know, that it's like they're, you know, they're always supposed to be the sexier, more powerful, more entrancing creatures. And a lot of us have those same things, and they're always powerful. So when you look at different social aspects, you know, and we look at the political things, well, you know, we can obviously go back in 2001. We were all for the war. We were all to go over there. And the mood has changed,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I have a brother that was in the military. And for me, it's, you know, I can see both sides. I can see, yeah, we should stick into it, because if we pull out, what did everyone die for?
Mm-hmm.
If we stay in and we lose more, then, you know, it's this double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And vampires are that double-edged sword for us. They are everything powerful, beautiful, you know, along those lines, but they are also everything we despise. They kill, you know, they kill, and they, you know, they just do things that us as, you know, I would say, you know, the conscious, you know, those of us that have a conscience don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's interesting. There's a quote that I've heard you say in other interviews, and it's just, it really summarizes that great. You say, vampires are a unique reflection of everything we fear and simultaneously everything we want to be.
That is true. That is true. And I don't think many people could argue with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Great. So I would really like to take a little bit of time to dedicate towards the martial arts and the weaponry that you bring into this trilogy. You've kind of touched on it in the second book, New Blood, and I believe that your third book is going to be all out with the weapons. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, I have been in karate for, since I was 8,
mm-hmm.
and I'm 30, about to turn 34 now. So I've been in it for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And
as law enforcement.
Yes, I was in law enforcement for a while as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's when you always know you should be a writer, you do as much as you can to experience as much as you can so you can draw from that. And, you know, I was a huge fan the moment I saw Chuck Norris' movie. I just fell in love with martial arts. I just was like, okay, this is for me. And in one of his movies, I think it was The Octagon, one of his enemies uses what's called kamas, and they are like a shortened form of the, how's the best, because a lot of people won't even know if I say that name. It's like a short wooden handle with a rounded blade at the end.
Mm-hmm. Like a sickle?
Yes, like a sickle.
Okay.
And you use, they're shortened, and you use two of them, and they're incredible weapons, and I love using them. And at the end of the second book, you get an insight of one of the characters has a modified kama. And I won't tell you what that is, but it's modified, and you do see some sparring action in the second one. But it's going to come to play more in the third book because, like I said, these characters are trying to hold on to their, you know, their selves,
mm-hmm.
their, you know, goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was all these years I spent in karate, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be able to put that into a fiction setting and enjoy what I've learned. And I've had some really great moments in karate. I won the world championships in Ishin Ryu Karate, the sparring competition in 1992.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, how many black belts do you have?
Well, I'm a third degree in Ishin Ryu, and I'm a second degree in Taekwondo.
Wow.
Yeah, I've spent some time.
That is fascinating.
So it's been really exciting, and what's great is I can use it towards this trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's real. When people read that and they have any karate background, they'll recognize that someone who knows what karate is about is using it. I think that the worst thing you can do is write about something like one of the characters is doing and not really have a firm grasp of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was interesting was when I started writing, a couple of the characters are football players, and, you know, I've never played football, but I live in San Diego, so I should be a Chargers fan, but I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan. So, you know, this past year everybody hated me here.
Oh, that's funny.
But, you know, I have watched it so much that I knew a lot about what was going on. So I was able to put that in there. And one of the readers said, wow, we would have never expected you to be a, you know, to have knowledge on football. And I was thinking, well, this is just from a fan perspective. You know, this
mm-hmm.
is passion. And I think when people read it, they see the passion in how I feel about vampires. I think they see the passion of football. And I think they will see, especially in the third book, my passion towards karate, because it's going to come into play very significantly.
Great. Is it just, you know, you say significantly, is it just the weaponry of it, or are you going to get into maybe some of the more in-depth aspects of the martial arts, like the spiritual nature of it?
Right. A lot of martial arts has to do with, your mind as well.
Yes.
And, my brother and I were very, very disciplined and still are very disciplined people. And I have every belief that it was because we started karate so young.
Mm.
And they taught us about respecting ourselves, respecting our mind, the whole nine yards. And when these characters start to come into the third book, they're going to find that inner peace. You know, they're going to realize that they're not murdering somebody. They're using self-defense to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for a couple of these characters, they have to accept that.
Okay.
That they can't fathom killing someone because they were trained only to use it as self-defense, but when you're already fighting the vampire instinct and everything else, you can get confused. And they're going to find that internal strength, you know, and go back to that training and know that what they're doing is for all the right reasons and not for all the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be I've written it, so.
Well, you know.
I know, but, you know, it's wonderful. It's wonderful to be able to express martial arts in a way that, unfortunately, you don't see much anymore. You don't see the passion. And, I mean, like I said, I was one of those kids that grew up on Chuck Norris movies. And
yeah.
you saw that there was always good moral, and you always saw that he chose not to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, I hope if he's listening, he contacts me, because he's the one person I've always wanted to meet.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and we live in the same state. And I don't, you know, I think he has a dojo up in the L.A. area. And I don't ever, you know, I just don't cross paths with people like that very often. So,
mm-hmm.
he's a great inspiration. So his techniques and, the spin kicks and the hook kicks and the, uppercuts and everything, that will all be shown in really intricate detail in the third book.
Great, great. So when can we expect the third book? And what is it called? What's the title?
It's going to be called The Vampire Within,
mm-hmm.
Life Eternal.
Okay.
And it's going to be out summer of 2008.
Great. And you have just released book two, New Blood.
Absolutely, yeah.
Excellent. I have one last question that I really like to hear. You know, you talk about that you've been a fan of Chuck Norris for a long, long time, but you actually, since you were a child, were a real fan of the whole horror genre. And I would love to know how this interest in horror films, horror themes, really got started at such a young age. And then, well, and then, you know, to carry that with the vampires.
Well, I, you know, my father is a huge fan of vampire novels.
Oh,
huge
okay.
fan. Mm-hmm. And he was always very careful to show me certain shows that weren't very graphic. But, you know, when we watched the original Dracula with Bela Lugosi, you know, it was amazing to me because, you know, at the time, you know, you watch it now and it's, you know, compared to the movies of today, it's like, okay, this is a little hokey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Bela Lugosi, you look at the way he moved his eyes, you look at the mystery behind him and the power that he had over people, as a kid it was like terrifying and exciting without the blood and without the gore, you know, without
yeah.
all that, it was just amazing. And then you have these, you know, the Slayer. You have all these people come into play, and for a child, you know, if you give a child the right stimulation, they're going to take that and they're going to make it their own. And so, you know, I just started thinking, even as a, you know, kid, I was like, well, vampires are pretty cool. I never found them evil because I thought it was always up to the person, you know, what you would do with it. And I was probably 12 or 13 or something like that, and, you know, it was Halloween, and I had my dad dye my hair completely black and painted my face white, and, you know, I looked like a vampire. In fact, when I went and knocked on my mom's door for trick-or-treating, she didn't recognize me. And it was one of those things, but, you know, we had just watched horror movies. My dad and I just watched horror movies together. You know, and based on my age is what he would show me. And as I got older, I just found an appreciation because horror movies and books, they make you appreciate your life.
Ah.
I mean, if you look at things like that, when you are, you know, people say, what's the fascination of horror movies? It's like, well, you're not the one being chased, and you're not the one being killed, and you're not the one being, you know, you're not that person, but you're there with them. And you appreciate that rush of emotion. You appreciate, you know, you can sit there and go, get out of the house, get out of the house, don't run up the stairs, get out of the house. You have that because for that moment of that 2 hours or the time you're reading that book, you can be that person and then close that book or shut off the movie and realize how thankful you are to be alive and how thankful you are to not be in that situation. And if a book is done or a movie's done well enough, you'll probably learn something about yourself that you didn't know, such as, you know, a lot of people, thanks to horror movies, probably will never park in a dark parking lot ever again. Well, you know, those people that do are more likely to get attacked there.
Yeah.
And I think that there's always something every day that we learn. And I think horror movies are, you know, there's good horror movies, and then there are horror movies that are nothing but special effects and gore.
Yeah.
And I think there's some really good movies, though, that you can learn, you know, a lot from.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. That's great. Drew, so what is your website? How can listeners today purchase your book?
Well, they can, if they want to check out my website, it's www.thevampirewithin.com.
Okay.
And if they want to purchase the book, they can go to Borders, Amazon.com, Target.com, Dark Delicacies Bookstore in Burbank, which is the largest horror store, and I'm trying to think, and almost any other online retailer. I think it's trickling into Barnes & Noble, but I don't think it's reached the masses yet. So,
okay.
But like I said, they can, and if they have problems or they, you know, are having running into brick walls, they can always email me, and I'll find it wherever it is for them and get it to them.
Great. It sounds like it would probably be no problem to order it through local and, or online booksellers.
No, not at all.
Okay, great. Well, you know, our time is coming to an end here. It has been just great talking with you, and I wanted to just give you the last minute to share any final thoughts you'd like to.
Oh, well, I just appreciate everybody tuning in and being so understanding of my chihuahua guarding me in the background. It's been a, I know that a lot of people out there want to you know, escape. I hope they escape with the Vampire Within. They won't be disappointed.
They won't, most certainly. Well, thank you so much, Drew. It has just been such a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure talking with you also.
Great, great. I look forward to book three, and hopefully we'll have you back at that time.
Oh, absolutely.
Good, good. Okay, well, you take care and have a great, great day.
You too.
Thanks, Drew. All right, listeners, there you have it, the trilogy, The Vampire Within. This has been book two, New Blood, and available in bookstores and online booksellers right now. So go look for it. This is a great, great series, and I really, really encourage you to have a look into it. As well, you can read a recent book review for The Vampire Within New Blood and online interview with Drew Silver at readerviews.com. Her website, once again, is www.thevampirewithin.com. So thanks so much for listening today. This has been Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.